Chapter 11. Because we had arrived at the witch's cottage shut inside a musty sack, I had no idea that Vonnegut had carried us from the swamp into the forest until I saw the towering trees that ringed the clearing. As Edric and I passed the first weathered trunks, I realized that I hadn't the faintest clue which way we should go. Tall trees blocked the sunlight, leaving the forest floor dark and gloomy. We passed beneath an old oak, hopping over its gnarled roots and the carpet of decaying leaves from years past. "This place is spooky," I said, glancing over my shoulder.
"I like the dark,"
said a voice, and we looked up to see Lil hanging from a branch, huddled against the trunk of the tree.
"It makes me feel safer. I think I was born somewhere around here, although I don't remember it very well."
"I have no idea how to reach the castle from here," I said. "Do you think you could fly above the trees and see if you can find it? That would help ever so much."
"If you really want me to, I suppose I could go look. But it's awfully bright up there."
"If you don't mind. It's the only castle around with green pennants flying from the turrets. You can't miss it." Lil nodded.
"I'll be right back."
We watched her flap her wings and fly between the branches in fits and starts.
"Does she seem nervous to you?" Edric asked.
"Very," I said. "But you can't blame her. This is the first time she's been outside since she was a baby. I think it would be frightening for her. So much of it will be new."
"And her flying?"
"Give her some time. Don't forget that she's been tethered to a rafter most of her life. I doubt she's been able to do much flying."
"I have to set this down," Edric said, placing the vial on the ground and rolling his shoulders to work out the kinks in his muscles. "That vial is heavier than it looks. Of course, if you kissed me again, I might have enough energy to haul it around some more."
I sighed and shook my head.
"I don't understand. Why do you keep asking for a kiss?"
Edric shrugged.
"Habit, I guess."
"Well, I guess I'm in the habit of saying no."
"Rejected again," he said, quirking up one corner of his mouth in a half smile. "I must admit, I'm getting used to it."
Leaves rustled as a squirrel darted along the branch of a tree. We both glanced up, and I, at least, felt very small, dwarfed by the immensity of the forest. The trees where we stood were ancient, their trunks so thick that I couldn't have put my arms around them, even when I was a human.
Broken branches littered the ground, and here and there we could see where one of the mature trees had fallen, exposing a patch of the forest floor to the sun. Young saplings were quick to grow in such spots, greedily seeking their share of the sunlight. With our backs to the meadow, the forest seemed to go on forever. It would be easy to get lost in such a place.
"You know," said Edric, "it might be a real help to have your bat friend with us. If she can scout ahead, she should be able to keep us going in the right direction."
Even if she weren't able to help us, I couldn't have left her behind. No one deserved to be left in that awful place.
"I'm glad you think so,"
breathed a voice that sent a chill up my spine. I turned my head toward the sound. Dead leaves whispered beneath the biggest snake that I had ever seen. Four black stripes ran down his gray and white body. A streak of black accented each eye. I froze, unable to move as the snake stared into my eyes.
"What is wrong?" breathed the snake. "Do you not recognize me?"
"Are you Fang?" I asked through a throat tight with fear.
"At your service," the snake hissed, coiling his length under him. "You mentioned your destination. I believe that you could use my company."
"Why would we want you along?" Edric asked, his voice quavering. The snake swung his head around to face my friend, looking him up and down as if appraising his next meal.
"Because I know what lives in this forest.
witches have lived here for centuries, and the spillover from their magic has changed even the trees themselves. But you need not fear the magical beings, for they will see you as an animal, and therefore one who belongs. Still, you would not make it through without me, for your indiscretions will soon attract the attention of predators. Without my protection, your journey is doomed before you begin.
Great, I thought. Even the snake is a critic. I swallowed past the lump in my throat and tried my best to look brave. So you're not going to eat us?
I do not eat creatures who have helped me. You freed me from a cage so small I feared I would soon go insane. I owe you far more than I can repay by a simple trip through the forest. No, I swear upon my honor as a snake that I shall not eat you. Fang dipped his head to me in a gesture both elegant and noble.
It was up to me to set an example. I resolved not to let anyone see either my fear or the revulsion I felt at being around a snake. Does that include my companions, too?
Of course. I will...
Snake! Snake!
Shrieked Lil, flitting back and forth just above our heads.
Look out, frogs! That's Fang, and he's going to get you! What can I do? What can I do?
The poor bat was frantic, and I began to worry that she might injure herself in her frenzy. Apparently, I wasn't the only one concerned, but the snake was more disapproving of the commotion than he was worried about her well-being.
Would you be so kind as to do something about Lil?
Fang said in a voice that made my skin crawl.
She's drawing too much attention to us. If you don't stop her immediately, I shall.
I couldn't watch my friend risk her life, but trusting a snake went against all my instincts. Setting aside my misgivings, I waved my arms frantically above my head and shouted as loudly as I could,
Lil, no, he's a friend.
I hoped it was the truth. Lil veered away in mid-flight and landed on the ground behind Edric.
Has Emma lost her mind?
She whispered.
How could any snake be her friend?
Fang says he owes her a debt, so he's going with us. He promises not to eat us.
Are you sure he can be trusted? He was always very polite, but he never seemed to want to be anyone's friend. How do we know this isn't a trick? From what I've heard, snakes are pretty sneaky characters.
What do you suggest we do about it? Whispered Edric. He's bigger than the rest of us put together. I don't think it would do any good to tell him not to come.
Maybe, said Lil. But we can keep an eye on him. We'll take turns watching him tonight. I'll take first watch.
You won't need to wake me when it's my turn, said Edric. I won't be able to sleep with him around anyway. What are you two talking about? I asked, although I'd already heard their conversation and feared that Fang had as well. I hopped closer to my friends while Fang raised his head and stared at them through slitted eyes.
Nothing,
said Lil in a tiny voice as she noticed Fang watching her. She crouched down to hide behind Edric until all I could see were the tips of her wings.
I was about to show Edric my twine. It's my only possession, and I couldn't leave it behind.
You risked your life for a piece of twine? I exclaimed. Lil peeked out from behind Edric.
That wasn't the only reason I stayed. I moved the book so Vonnaby wouldn't know what we'd done. Anyway, the string will be really useful. We can tie the dragon's breath to someone's back with it. Here,
she said, handing it to Edric. Edric examined the coarse brown string, turning it over in his hands. Fine. Tie it to my back. At least that way my arms won't get tired anymore.
If you have finished your conversation, may I suggest that we move on? Hissed Fang. You are wasting daylight hours. At the sound of Fang's voice, Lil ducked down behind Edric again.
I saw the castle. I can show you how to get there, she whispered.
That would be a big help, I said, trying to be encouraging. Fang, said Edric.
I'd feel a lot more comfortable if you went in front of Emma and me.
Excellent thinking, said the snake. I'll scout ahead for trouble.
Lil took off, and the snake watched to see where she headed before slithering off into the leaf litter. It was up to me to tie the vial to Edric's back. Although frogs can do many things with their fingers, tying knots is not one of them. You'd think four fingers would be enough to tie a knot, I said, fumbling with the twine. But these things just don't work the same as human fingers, too. I wish Mo were here. He was the one who knew all about knots.
Who is Mo?
Edric asked. Not another friend of yours. You collect friends like black tunics collect dandruff. I sighed. I'd forgotten that Edric had slept through an entire day. Never mind, I told him. Someday I'll tell you all about everything you missed while you were asleep. But right now, you can tell me something. What are you and Lil up to? Lil and I don't trust that snake, and we want to keep an eye on him. I wouldn't want him behind us anyway. Who knows when he might get tired of watching such tempting morsels hopping along right under his nose. A promise is easy to forget when you're hungry. He was hungry when he left the cottage. If he wanted to eat us, wouldn't he have done it already? My dear Princess Emeralda, you are awfully naive. Or perhaps I should say that you are too trusting. You think that everyone is going to be your friend until you learn otherwise. Look who's talking. You're the one who ate the witch's worm. But you're wrong, you know. I didn't trust you at first.
Then you trust everyone but me.
That's not true. I trust you now.
Good. But you still shouldn't trust that snake. I don't think we need him, despite what he says.
You don't think we're in danger in these woods?
I think the biggest danger we'll face just invited itself along.
I don't know. These woods are awfully creepy. I can't wait to get through them and back into the sunlight. I looked up at the leafy canopy. Lil flew off periodically to check our progress, then returned to keep us headed in the right direction. However, we saw little of Fang for the rest of the day. He scouted ahead as he'd said he would, and if he came across anything dangerous, he didn't tell us about it. We saw some strange sights as we traveled, things that could be attributed only to magic. Trees seemed to move in most untree-like ways, bending with a fluid grace to lean toward neighbors, the rustle of their leaves almost sounding like words. I swore I saw one pull up its roots and move into a patch of sunlight. But when we reached the spot, the roots looked as if they'd been growing there for years. We'd been traveling through the woods for a few hours when the ground began to shake and we heard the thudding footsteps of a large, heavy creature. Although the noise grew increasingly loud, distance and dense foliage kept the thing hidden from sight. Suddenly, there was a tremendous crash, followed by the shriek of splitting wood. The trees around us shuddered in sympathy, raining leaves like emerald teardrops. I jumped to avoid a falling twig, but the ground wasn't where I thought it would be, and I landed in a depression nearly twice my height.
Emma, what happened? Are you all right?
Edric's shout made me cringe, for he had been loud and I knew the sound would carry.
Shh! I whispered. Not so loud! I'm down here!
Edric's face appeared over the edge of the hole, peering down at me with a look of such concern that I immediately regretted scolding him.
Let me help you up, he said, extending his hand to take mine.
You don't need to do that, I said, backing up a few steps. I think I can make it.
Watch out!
I tensed my legs and was about to leap when the ground shook with such force that the sides of the hole began to crumble, dropping clods of dirt onto my head and shoulders. A faint whimper came from above, and Edric plopped into the hole beside me.
The moment he landed, he shoved me back against the side of the depression and held me there, all the while looking as though he would like to disappear straight into the soil. There was a deafening thud, and something blew hot air reeking of brimstone into our hole.
"Frogs,"
grated a voice, sounding so disappointed that I almost spoke up. Edric must have sensed this, for he clapped his hand over my mouth until the creature took off with a great flapping of leathery wings that sent leaves and other debris swirling around us.
"What was that?"
I whispered once the sound had grown too faint to hear.
"A dragon,"
Edric breathed.
"I didn't know there were any around here. Why, if I had my sword..."
"You wouldn't be able to lift it. You're a frog, remember?"
"Oh, yeah. But as soon as I'm human again..."
"Uh-huh," I said, finding it hard to believe that Edric would ever face a dragon in any form, whether he had a sword or not.
"Come on. We have to get out of here if we're going to get changed back."
Jumping out of the hole was easy, but we'd gotten turned around and it took us a few minutes to find our original heading. The trees seemed to have moved as well, but we finally found our footprints and determined which direction we'd been going before. We also figured out what had made the hole. It looked like a giant footprint.
"Giants and dragons,"
Edric said, grinning from eardrum to eardrum.
"I really will have to come back here with my sword."
"Right," I said. "Whatever you say." I began to notice other prints after that, like the enormous marks of a griffin's talon and paw. We saw additional signs of the dragon as well, for some of the trees were singed and the bark had been rubbed off others. Sensitive to the forest now, I saw shadows where there was sound but no substance, flickering lights where there should have been none, but nothing else came to bother us. If we had passed through this forest in the witch's bag, it was just as well that we had done it in ignorance. We had both been complaining of thirst for some time when we finally came across a pool of water. Although sheltered by the canopy of ancient interlocking branches, the water sparkled invitingly as if lying in the direct rays of the brightly shining sun.
"What are you waiting for?" Edric asked when I hesitated. "It looks clean enough."
"Maybe so, but what do we really know about it? It could be enchanted or even poisoned. I'm not sure."
I gasped, for the face and dripping locks of a beautiful, ageless nymph had broken the surface of the water.
She looked around eagerly, but when she failed to see whatever it was that she was looking for, her perfect mouth twisted in a sulky pout and her aqua-colored eyes clouded over. Sighing loudly, the nymph rose gracefully from the water and stepped onto the bank. Although her long green hair reached past her knees, it did little to cover her naked form. Ignoring us, she dropped down on one of the larger flat rocks and began to comb her hair, her gaze as unfocused as a daydream. Edric sighed, and I glanced in his direction. To my disgust, he was gazing longingly at the nymph like some lovesick squire who just discovered his true love.
"Edric," I said, jabbing him with my elbow, "what's wrong with you? She's a nymph. You know she has only one thing on her mind."
"I know," he said, his eyes glazing over, "and I'm a handsome prince.
Edric, you're..."
But my warning was too late, for Edric had hopped onto the rock.
"You are the essence of beauty," he began, his eyes raised adoringly to the nymph's face. "You are my sun, my moon, my stars."
"You're a frog," she said, noticing him at last. "I don't talk to frogs."
"I'm not just a frog."
"You look like a frog to me," she said, the tiniest frown wrinkling her flawless brow.
"Yes, yes, of course I do, my sweet, but I'm really an enchanted prince."
The nymph's eyes flickered with interest.
"Prove it. Show me your crown or your jeweled sword."
"I'm sorry, I don't have them with me." she said, her pout returning. "Then you'll have to leave. Someone important might come by at any moment."
"But I'm important. I'm..."
"You're a frog. Now go away. This is my pool, and I don't allow frogs here. You lay those disgusting, gooey eggs and foul my nice, clean water."
"But I'm a prince. I don't lay eggs. I won't..."
Tossing her hair over her shoulder with a dainty flip of her wrist, the nymph turned her back and pointedly ignored Edric. He looked so crestfallen, I almost felt sorry for him. Almost, but not quite.
"But I am a prince," he said when he joined me back on the bank.
"Not right now, you're not, and it's a good thing, too. Nymphs drown princes, so be happy that she's not interested in you. It's the only reason you're still alive. The potion Vonnebe put on that worm must have softened your brain. We'd better go before you make an even bigger fool of yourself." I couldn't tell whether Edric was upset by the nymph's rejection or because I'd called him a fool, but either way, he was in a sulky mood. It was probably just as well that he didn't feel like talking to me, since I was so irritated that I couldn't have said a pleasant word to him even if he'd paid me with all the mosquitoes in the forest. Fuming silently at Edric's foolishness, I was relieved to see a friendly face when Lil found us on the forest floor. She'd come to tell us that we didn't have far to travel, but it was already getting too dark to see, though she seemed not to mind. "I think we'd better stop now," I said, raising my hand and wiggling my fingers. "I can barely see my hand in front of my face."
"If you really want to," Lil replied. "Although I think it's just getting nice out. But if you want to go to sleep, you should find a good place to hide. Who knows what comes out at night in these woods?"
"I can think of one thing," Edric said, spotting a sudden flash of light.
"Fireflies! Ladies and gentlemen, I think dinner has arrived."
A firefly darted erratically through the gloom beneath the trees, its tiny light pinpointing its path. Despite the empty ache in my stomach, I was reluctant to try to catch one. I'd heard that fairies often flew about at night dressed in little more than twinkling lights. Because they were nasty when insulted, I shuddered to think what they might do if you tried to eat them. Edric, however, had no such qualms and quickly set about catching his dinner. I laughed when I saw his throat lit up from inside. My guffaw was loud in the darkened night and sounded strange even in my own eardrums. I stopped abruptly, frightened by the thought of the predators that might hear me. I no longer felt like laughing. Eventually satisfied that they really were fireflies and not deceitful fairies, I flicked out my tongue, coiling it back with a tingle of anticipation. It wasn't bad. While Edric and I waited for another firefly to pass by, Lil flew over to sit beside me.
"How do they taste?"
she asked. "Delicious. And just think, a week ago you couldn't have paid me to eat a firefly."
"A week ago I didn't know what they were,"
said Lil.
"I've never had one."
"Never?" I said. "Then you need to try them." Something rustled the leaves in the tree above us, prompting Lil to look about nervously. Wrapping her wings around her body to make herself as small as she could, she shuffled toward me until we stood shoulder to wing. Although the night sounds made me nervous as well, I was reluctant to let Lil see it, and I was sure it would only add to her fear. "While you're here," I said, hoping to distract her, "there's something I've wanted to ask you. Back in the cottage, why did the open box spell work, even though I didn't gesture or use a dramatic voice like you told me to?" Lil shrugged her wings.
"You don't have to do those things to make the spell work. I just like it better when it's done that way."
"You mean all that arm waving I did was just for show?"
"Yep."
"I thought it might be something special that Madin did to make the spells more powerful."
"Nope."
"And what about the first spell, the one for rashes? It worked only on me, but when I did the spell to open boxes, it opened everything in the cottage."
"Actually, they both would have worked on everyone near you, but you were the only one with a rash. If you want a spell to be specific to one subject, you need to use something to focus it. You can point just about anything at your subject to aim the power.
Like a magic wand?
Yep. Although it doesn't have to be a wand. In fact, if a witch has had enough practice, pointing her finger works just fine.
I'd been watching Edric while Lil and I talked, amazed at how many insects he'd eaten. Neither our conversation nor the strangeness of the forest could distract him from the pursuit of food.
"Will you look at that?"
I said to Lil. "If we don't stop talking and go catch some fireflies, Edric'll eat 'em all himself." Lil smiled half-heartedly and took to the air to chase her first firefly. Darting between the trees, she snatched insects from the air as if magnetically drawn to them. A day of flying had improved her rusty skills, and she no longer seemed so hesitant. We ate until we were full. Then Edric and I made ourselves cozy beds in the decomposing leaves, while Lil flew into the branches of the ancient maple above us. It didn't take Edric long to fall asleep, but I lay awake far into the night. My thoughts bounced from one subject to another, and I found myself worrying about everything. What would happen to Edric and me? Would Lil like living with Grisina? How would I explain everything to my mother? Would the trees still be in the same place when we woke up in the morning? I wanted to go to sleep, but it seemed as if I'd forgotten how. Forcing myself to relax, I listened to the night sounds of the forest. Edric snoring gently under his blanket of leaves. Lil moving from one branch to another. A distant owl hooting softly. Mice rustling the leaves in search of food. The creak of branches and the whispering of leaves. Eventually, the sounds grew fainter. The next thing I knew, I was in the great hall of my parents' castle. It was dark and deserted. Even the guards were nowhere in sight. Torches burned in the wall sconces, casting a feeble light that flickered and created shadows. A snorting, breathy sound came from a darkened corner of the room. The shadows swayed, dancing in a non-existent breeze. Crossing the hall, I entered the corridor beyond. It was the corridor that led to my aunt's room, the corridor that had always led to safety. Inside the doorway, I found myself in the cozy familiarity of my aunt's room. The fire burned brightly in the fireplace, just as it always did. The drifting balls of witch's light cast their comforting glow, just as they always did. But still, something didn't feel right. I walked to the fireplace, my hands held toward the fire to warm the chill from my fingers. Then suddenly, everything was different. The room had changed. No longer in my aunt's safe, inviting room, I now stood by the fireplace in Vonnebee's cottage. Bright, shiny objects lay on the table, drawing me to them. The air around me wavered as I moved across the floor. Reaching the table, I found knives made of brightly polished metal. The whisper of fabric came from behind me. I turned quickly. Vonnebee stood in the doorway, her heavy skirt swaying, a wide-bladed knife in her hand.
"I won't keep you long," she said. "I only want your tongue and your toes. You know you'd do anything to help a friend. Think of me as your friend and let me have them. It's just a small favor. Tongue and toes, that's all I want."
The whispering came again as Vonnebee drew closer.
"If you hold still, this won't hurt too much."
I woke with a start. My heart raced and my hands felt clammy. I felt disoriented and lost. My nest beneath the leaves was dark and confining. Panic-stricken, I pushed the leaves aside and scrambled into the open. I glanced around, trying to get my bearings. The back of my neck prickled the way it had when the eyeballs watched me. Vonnebee was here. But when I looked up, it wasn't the witch who was swooping down on me, but an owl, its beak open in anticipation. Too scared to call out, too frightened to move, I pressed myself against the ground, convinced that I was about to die. Suddenly, a large, sinuous body whipped between us. Hissing, the snake lunged, barely missing the startled owl as it pulled up only inches from me. Its wings beating frantically, the owl fluttered away in distress, still alive.
Are you all right?
Hissed Fang, keeping his eyes on the departing owl.
Yes,
I breathed, with a throat too dry from fear to say more.
Go back to sleep, whispered Fang. I will keep guard. You have nothing more to fear this night.
I surprised myself by believing him. If Fang had wanted to eat me, he wouldn't have waited this long. For the first time in days, I began to feel secure. Burrowing under the leaves again, I thought of waking Edric, of telling him how close I had come to being an owl's midnight snack. But the more I thought about it, the fewer reasons I could find for waking him. So I let him sleep undisturbed. I'll tell him in the morning, I thought. There's no need to tell him now. Edric was still asleep when I woke the next morning. I remembered my intention to tell him about the owl, but in the light of day I began to doubt that it had really happened. After eating a dozen salty mosquitoes, I went looking for a nice juicy beetle. When I returned, I found Edric and Lil in the midst of a heated discussion. "Why didn't you wake me?" demanded Edric. "I told you I would take the second watch."
"You told me you weren't going to sleep at all. I could hear you snoring all night long,"
Lil said. "Don't exaggerate. Frogs don't snore. Maybe your hearing isn't as good as I thought it was."
"Maybe not all frogs snore, but you do. I found myself a hidey hole in the trunk of that tree, and I could hear you even from there. It's a good thing nothing happened last night. If I could hear your snoring, other creatures could have as well. We're lucky no predators came to see what was making that awful racket."
"Good morning, Lil. Edric," I said, nodding to my friends. "Is everything all right?"
"Just fine and dandy," said Lil, yawning broadly. "If you're ready, we should be off."
"I'll tell Fang," I said. "He's around here somewhere."
"Don't bother," said Lil. "I already told him. Just follow this deer trail up the hill and over the other side. You'll be able to see the castle once you reach the road. I'm going to find myself a new hidey hole at the edge of the forest so I can take a nap. I'll see you when you get there. Your voices will wake me up. I have excellent hearing, remember?"
Spreading her wings wide, she glanced at Edric.
"And Edric, next time I will wake you up, whether you want me to or not."
Lil took off, leaving me to adjust the vial on Edric's back. I untied the knot and straightened the twisted twine. What happened back there between you and Lil? She seemed pretty upset.
What can I say? She's a bat with an attitude problem. I am feeling out of sorts, though. I had a terrible nightmare last night.
What happened in your nightmare?
An owl almost got you. Thank goodness it was just a dream, Emma. I'd never forgive myself if anything ever happened to you.
Edric looked so sincere that I almost felt sorry for him, except his mistake had put a life on the line, and the life had been mine. I pulled the twine tighter, then tried to tie a better knot. It wasn't a dream, Edric. There really was an owl, and it really did almost get me. And Lil was right. You do snore. If it hadn't been for Fang, I'd be filling some owl's stomach right now.